Welcome back to The Access Point, where we examine real challenges Black and Brown professionals face at work and offer expert advice on dealing with your organization, your boss, your coworkers, and your career. I am Dr. Wendy M. Edmonds, author, management consultant, and interim chair in the Management Marketing and Public Administration Department in Higher Ed. My area of research is toxic followership. That's right. Why do people follow bad people? I am a workplace toxicologist helping you to dismantle the poison people bring to work. Now, I am not alone. I have a wonderful host, Dr. Lonnie Morris. Dr. Lonnie, let's roll.
Dr. Wendy, it is always so incredible to be here with you. I am Dr. Lonnie Morris, and I am a management professor and consultant, and I spend most of my time helping really smart people unpack crazy situations at work. And a lot of that work, some of that work is in corporate settings. A lot of that work is in education and nonprofit settings. I really look forward to helping all of you hate your job less. I'm excited about this episode, as I'm about all the other episodes. But before we even get into what we're talking about today, I want to make sure that you don't forget to check out The Access Point on Flipboard. You can go to flipboard.com/@TheAccessPoint for all the links to the articles and readings we'll mention in tonight's conversation, as well as with all the other episodes that we do.
Now, you all know we keep it real here. So let's go to the disclaimer. Thoughts and views expressed in tonight's discussion do not reflect the views of any organization with which the hosts or guests may be affiliated.
But I stand by everything I say. So as we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of hip hop this year, and I've seen multiple celebrations across so many platforms. There have been specials on PBS. I watched an incredible documentary on ESPN about hip hop and sports, and multiple documentaries and music shows. Thought it was only appropriate that we bring the conversation of hip hop and juxtapose that with the workplace. And we have an incredible guest today to help us think about what it means to bring all of your hip hop self and its authenticity into work and show up for the culture. Our guest today is Jason William Johnson. He is the founder and chief sound strategist for Sound Strategies, where he provides keynote concerts, live training workshops, and strategic rap songwriting to communicate complex strategies and core values in a way that engages, inspires, and sticks. In addition to this work at Sound Strategies, Jason is also the director of people and culture at Next Street, a mission-driven firm that works with governments and corporations to develop ecosystem-wide strategy to support small businesses. In his role at Next Street, he serves as a steward of the firm's culture and is building the firm's internal learning and development program and works with senior leaders to craft and manage internal change communications of the organization's strategy and vision. And he also just had this incredible podcast. I mean, an incredible TEDx talk that just hit sound waves. And I think it's got, when I look today, over 53,000 views. Welcome to The Access Point, Jason William Johnson.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Lonnie and Dr. Wendy. How are you guys doing this evening or afternoon or today?
Whatever
you gotta account, you gotta account for when people are gonna watch this. Yeah, you gotta account for the asynchronicity of it. So, yeah.
So all is well for all of
all
the above.
Is well. All is well. All is well. So this is, you are just the perfect person to help us bridge this gap between the two worlds as we talk about this. So then watching people do this throughout the year as we celebrate hip hop culture, I think we should start by saying that as we talk about hip hop culture, we don't just mean rap. We don't just mean music. It embraces dance. It is graffiti, right? So it's art. It is clothing. It's design. There's so many ways that hip hop permeates throughout what we see and what we consume, and not just in the Black communities. It is a worldwide phenomenon. And in fact, the highest selling and largest and most impactful genre of music right now. So as we look at this, and I love that you did this incredible TEDx talk about the four lessons that you learned from hip hop and how that informs business. Now, I don't want you to give those lessons away here, because we want people to go in, if they haven't already, listen to the incredible spiel that you gave us, but I also want us to start with thinking about how did you get that connection, right? How do we get from what you do in your work and being a rapper and doing that in the business community? And how do we transition that to, here are some lessons that are important to apply, not just in the world that I am in every day, but that apply across businesses. How do we get to that point?
So it's kind of like an interesting personal journey. So, you know, grew up rapping. Always thought I was going to be a rapper. That was like the main thing I was focused on when I was younger. Actually got some friends who went on to become Grammy Award winning artists and whatnot. So pretty much got around 23, 24. And this is before Jay-Z was like 55 still rapping and Nas reaching his creative peak at the tender age of like 47. Like, this is way before that. Thought back when I was coming up, like once you hit 25, it was like, all right, let me go to graduate school. You know, so went to graduate school. Came out, really got engaged in entrepreneurship, launched a consulting business. Then ended up doing entrepreneurship because I launched a consulting business doing small business support, like working with small to medium sized businesses, helping them with strategy, web design, things like that. Urban League started off as a client, ended up becoming the place that I ended up going. And you know, first started off as a program manager there, then became director of the Center for Entrepreneurship and Innovation. So I was preparing for a talk at this conference called Glapanova. Shout out to Nick Brown. And when I was prepping for Glapanova, like I wanted to do a twist. So I wanted to give like, it hit me like 10 launch commandments for launching your business, right? So then I was like, oh, I got to do it like Biggie did it. You know, it was just like, I wanted to test myself from that lyrical standpoint, because like, if you're going to touch Biggie, you got to bring fire, right? You can't like just address. So did that and went really, really well. The talk went really, really well. I rapped it a cappella. So then I was like, oh, let's do a music video for it. So we ended up doing a music video for it and things like that. It had a lot of views on social media. I think got like 20 to 30,000 views on Facebook, another like 10,000 on LinkedIn. A rap video doing like 10,000 on LinkedIn is like crazy. But what ended up happening was I thought about it and I was like, if like rappers, if when I used to listen to The Firm and like Foxy Brown was breaking down all the mathematics on how to flip coke and stuff, like, I'm like, if I could get a working theory on selling drugs, and I've never sold a drug in my life, right? But if I decided to, I could get a working theory just from listening to certain music, right? I was like, I could do this for business. Because at that time, I had led entrepreneurship centers. I've coached hundreds of entrepreneurs. I've developed deep subject matter expertise in startup, business strategy, things like that. And I still had a pen game. So it was just like, I can do this like to work with businesses, like to help businesses and things like that. So that's kind of how I ended up like shifting to integrating entrepreneur business and like my expertise in entrepreneurship. So the funny thing is when I came to Next Street, and the songwriting thing was kind of how this happened. And an interesting thing about Next Street was like, we're a mission driven firm. We're a B Corp and we're striving to be an anti-racist organization. So we really are championing anti-racism and things like that. So I felt inspired by our strategic plan and I wrote a song about it. One of the co-CEOs went crazy. He was like, oh my God, this is fire. This is fire.
You see it just like that.
You know, like 33 year old Jewish guy. Like, this is fire. This is hot.
He was in tune.
Yeah. So I performed it at like our virtual strategic, because at the panel it was still pandemic. That went well. And then like maybe about 4 months ago, he asked me to do it for like create a new song for our in-person retreat in New York. Went over well again. Everybody went crazy. Everybody loved it, et cetera, et cetera. So then I started thinking like, okay, this song, I'm doing the leadership training. Cause at this point I started doing the experiential leadership training already, you know, I had taken on some clients where I do these workshops where we integrate freestyle rapping, songwriting, and all of these different elements of like hip hop performance into like leadership development workshops on like you know, like positioning yourself in the marketplace or small or business resiliency, like especially dealing with uncertainty and things like that. Then the song, I was like, oh, I could also do songs for change communication as well. So that's kind of how the evolution of all of that came. But it was interesting because it was really more of a, because everybody who knows me, I'll be like, Jason got bars. Like, even like, I'll be like on the bus and then some kids would be rapping and I'll come up and I'll start rapping and they'll walk away. You got bars, sir. Like, you know, just those type of things, right?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
It's like, sir, yeah. You know, like, yes. It's a respect, you know, children still polite and respectful. But yeah, so it was just kind of like bringing my whole self and taking a talent that I thought that I had to like sit on the sidelines and be able to leverage it to be very, very impactful to organizations and small businesses. So that's kind of how I got there.
Let me just applaud you for doing what you do, number one.
Yeah.
And LinkedIn, to get that many views on LinkedIn, because the haters will say, well, this is not the platform. And in fact, you just shattered that. It is the platform. And that's how you express yourself. That level of creativity, I just want to say, is overdue.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Dr. Wendy.
Yeah. So I love this. I love this that you've connected our thinking about hip hop and what we may sometimes just view as our creative talent, that's a sort of our side hustle and what we do as a hobby, something that's really valuable and not just brings value to your own experience and your whole self, but brings value to organizations and value to people who are experiencing that through your own talent, right? That it is transformed through you and transcends to them. I love that. So I want to take us to this. If we think of it as hip hop culture broadly, as we started talking about it, and what you just described in terms of your own creative process and how you've used that in multiple organizations and shaping how you're able to have impact with businesses and business leaders, we think about this whole self, right, and the creativity that's involved with that, and Dr. Wendy mm-hmm. mentioned, think about it from, because we talk about well-being a lot on the Access Point, and so particularly if we got a workplace toxicologist here, so how do we get rid of that poison? So how does that whole self creativity that spawns from hip hop culture apply to our well-being in the workplace? And I'll tell you why I asked that. And I want to give a shout out to I do not know this person, but I found this master's thesis from Concordia University by John Aaron Tyree. So John, if you out there, I love this work. This is earlier this year.
At the master's level too.
Earlier this
yes.
year.
Early yes.
year. And his master's thesis is about hip hop to promote well-being in marginalized communities. And this is from Canada. He said in Montreal. So what he said is he found that part of the hip hop culture fosters deep connections between youth, professions, and the community. It's a foundation for meeting people where their passions lie, that it creates collaborations with volunteers from hip hop communities and teachers and students to create links between grassroots and formal education practices. I know that speaks to what you're doing, Jason, as developing and training and development stuff. And then also that it's a vehicle for engaging communities around critical social issues, such as racial profiling, climate justice, right? So when we think about those are sort of framing how we see the world and what we bring in our whole self and our creative talents into the workplace. How does this help us with the idea of well-being?
So, I mean, obviously music like is one of the most powerful languages that we can, ways of communication. Like it can invoke emotion. It can evoke nostalgia. It can evoke a variety of different emotions. And in general, it's kind of hard to listen to great music and be mad. I mean, you can listen to Lil Jon and like turn up and like, but you ain't really
and
mad.
I do.
You just crunk.
I really do.
Yeah, you're not like mad. You like crunk mad. It's like crunk and mad is like slightly different. But like in general, like you can, music does so much to elevate your emotions, right? It can be healing within itself, right? And this goes beyond like, and while hip hop, you know, like, and hip hop, you know, culture and everything is part of that. And I'm gonna start with the musical aspect, then I'm gonna talk about hip hop culture broader. like the music, it can be healing in a lot of respects, right? So that's important to recognize and not underestimate the power of music to heal, to draw connections and things like that. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, people form relationships around music. People, you know, fellowship with music. Music's a powerful tool. But then when we think about the principles of hip hop, you know, themselves, the opportunity to share my story, right? The opportunity to engage in authenticity, right? Because, I mean, the thing is what they say, can't talk about it if you ain't live it, what Hov say. Like, yeah. So then it allows people to give people, it gives people a vehicle where they can be them authentic shells. They can share their personal stories. And then they can engage with one another, right? And I think in the workplace, this can have a very, very powerful tool, like a very, very powerful effect. So I actually do a workshop called the Diversity Flow as part of like my suite of solutions. And what we do is we have people write songs about their unique lived experiences in the organization. So, you know, Black folks, Brown folks, you know, LGBTQ, everybody from all different, like intersectionalities of diversity within their organization to be able to transparently share their feelings and their experiences, in song and then, in written rhymes, and then allow, the people to share them, express them, and just like allow that to be a way to form connections and deeper understanding of everybody's lived experiences in the workplace. So I've actually like leveraged hip hop as a tool in that regard as well, but it can be a very, very powerful healing tool, the culture and the musical component of it.
You know, you are so right. When I think about the five generations in the workplace, you are fortunate to have someone who has embraced that and says, oh, this is great. Not only did you do a good job here, we need you again, because they see the power of bringing people together and what music really does. And that's just historic for Black people. Slavery time, it was always the music in the fields that brought everyone together. It was the messaging that went across. So this isn't anything new, and I am pleased to see that it is being embraced and used. Like, you have really hit on something that's huge. I want to also say to you that, you know, the way you're bringing it, and we are referring to the hip hop culture, we cannot be ignored. Like, you can't box this music up. You can't box this delivery. This is for the whosoever will. And when you choose not to, it's still going to be there, because it's going to resonate with everyone else. So the words can be more than just soothing to your spirit. It could be speaking to your heart. And that's what we really need in the workplace. That's what's missing in the workplace. What is going to resonate with people, regardless of your age, regardless as to whether or not you like hip hop? It's the words. It speaks to the soul.
But the interesting thing is, the majority of the population, as far as that's of working age, is Gen X and later at this point, right? Millennials, post millennials, and that all of us came up on hip hop in that regard, right? And then I had a manager, my first job. She told me, people are human beings before they're their function or title at work. And that like continues to resonate with me, right? So like, obviously, Dr. Lonnie, you mentioned that hip hop's the most consumed genre, out of all musical forms. So, I mean, basically everybody's listening to it, right? But it's almost like it's this little situation where we're at work. We're, hi, how are you doing? I'm such and such.
I know.
And then we like, hey.
Yeah.
And we turn it up. So like with me, and people always say, like, oh, you're so courageous to do what you're doing. I'm like, nah, I'm just getting people to move beyond trying to have these facades or feeling like they can't bring their whole self by bringing my whole self and just kind of shattering that whole idea of I have to be this particular way at work. And I have to be, this particular way at home. Like, obviously, I'm not coming in like cursing and stuff, or rap. I'm rapping about the things that's going on, like, in your organization. I'm rapping about business strategy. I'm rapping about all of the things that you would be engaging in at work. Your organizational culture, your organizational strategy. But I'm just like taking this powerful tool, which is basically, and Dr. Wendy, you mentioned it, like, you know, like back when we was doing the Negro spirituals, but even before then, when we were back in our homeland, you know, and we were like, you know, we didn't have the written word and we were sharing stories through music and sharing traditions and preserving culture, like and transmitting knowledge, all the things you actually need to do as an organization. Like hip hop does that because it's grounded in a lot of the same principles that, you know, that we've had as part of our people from day one. Community, you know, music, fellowship, you know, individual expression, all of those different things that's been part of who we were as a people from like our earliest inceptions before we came over here are all like the undertenants of what makes hip hop. And they're also the things that organizations need.
Yeah. Yeah. And here's why I love that, right? Because the things we're talking about are about community and about how we bring ourselves and the things that we learn from our families, things that we learn from our grandmothers, or our great aunts, and that are passed down, that become part of us, the things that we love at home that we shouldn't have to give up just to go to work. There is a study I saw in, what's the journal? Literary Research, Theory, Method, and Practice. And this is from middle of last year. And it's a study on hip hop, and I love this, right? So it's called Between Hip Hop and Me, and it's something about assessing the tools of cultural brokerage for community capital wealth. And I want to unpack this a little bit because I wasn't familiar with the term community capital wealth. I'll tell you why this is important to what we're discussing. The community capital wealth is defined as an array of knowledge, skills, abilities, and contacts accumulated by communities of color to survive and resist micro and macro forms of oppression. Mm. So here's why
wow.
this community capital wealth is so significant, because the people from our community who were researching this said, we want to understand how community capital wealth is expressed through how people describe their creative processes. And we're listening to you as the genius here, Jason, around it. And so there are six components of this, right? Mm-hmm. Aspirational wealth, linguistic wealth, familiar wealth, social wealth, navigational wealth, and resistant wealth. So it's about dealing with hopes and dreams, intellectual and social skills, cultural knowledge that's nurtured through family relationships, networks of people, maneuver. I love this one. The skills of maneuvering through social institutions. And the resistant wealth is about knowledges and skills fostered through oppositional behavior that challenges inequality, right? Mm. That's what we're all about. That's what the access point is about. That's what Living Corporate is about. So my question to both of you, and I want you to start with this one, Dr. Wendy, what do our approaches to work reveal about our community capital wealth? As we think about what Jason's been describing about his creative process and how he's using this in this space, and we are applauding that, what does that tell us about our community capital wealth?
That we came from the good stuff.
Yeah!
Let's just, hey. And we don't have to hide it. We don't have to change it. We have to bring it. So when we talk about code switching, this is the way we don't do it. We should never be changing who we are. To bring it is courage. That's what they told you, Jason. It's not courage. That's who you are. That's who you are. And that's what I always say when people see me. Who you see in the grocery store is who you see at the desk in the office. It's who you see on the beach, right?
Yes.
It's me all day long. That's but 100. these are the things about us that brings the value to the organization. And because sometimes it isn't accepted, isn't because it's wrong or bad, but because they're unable to do that. And so we have to think about that, where the suppression or the thought that there's a need to suppress that. Just think about how, Jason, you just talked about that, how you greet. You know, good morning, how are you? Very very proper in a sense that what is acceptable, because the rules have been set and we are expected to line up. No, bring your whole self to work. These That's are my whole
mantra. What up, homie?
That's my whole mantra, Dr. Wendy. You know, the funny thing is, like, people ask me, how are you so, like, I'm always complimented. Oh, Jason's just so authentic. Jason's so authentic. Jason's, like, I don't code switch. I'm the exact same person at work as I am with my family, as I am on a TEDx stage, as I am anywhere else. Like, it's because I feel like people in general, especially our people, I feel like we feel like we're like imprisoned in a lot of respects by expectations, by, you know, these norms of the majority and a variety of other different things. And we don't really have the space to express our true self. And the irony of it is, if you're not able to bring your full and authentic self, you're not going to be your best. Right. So me, like, I'm going to like be me like all the time. Like the other day I was doing a workshop for the organization. Like we had a convening of all of the senior leaders. And on the slide deck, it said today's agenda. And in parentheses, I had got the suitcase up in the central, you know, which is a piggy line, right? And I was like, extra credit for anybody who could guess that, right? Like, I just, you know, and those are the type of things that I do. Like, I just bring my authentic self. I think people appreciate it because even people who aren't people of color also, like, everybody feels like they have to be a particular way. They don't feel like they could bring their authentic self. And I feel like, the people who are able to do that, they have a sense of freedom that other people admire, right? And the thing is, yeah. is like I always recognize, like, as a Black person, right? This has always been my mindset. Like, okay, I'm just as smart as them, and I got swag. We're the same IQ level. We got the same level of intelligence. You know, we're in the same place, but you don't got the swag. So I win. You know what I mean?
That's
always been my approach. No matter what rooms but you know, we could use the professional terms, charisma, charismatic leadership, you know, those type of things.
You are funny.
I can cite the literature. We could do that too. But I'm just saying, I mean, it's swag ultimately. Like, and it's a charisma because people admire. Idealized influence and transformational leadership literature. Like, it's just, but we have that naturally. We just can't be afraid to bring it.
Right, because that could sometimes be a means of deterring us from being successful. So our what makes us unique could be used as a weapon to
we see it all the time, right? We see it all the time. Yeah, and I've had that with, particularly with women of color that I've supervised, right? And it's not been, and I've been 100% supportive, but I've had people in the organization, well, I don't like how she dresses. I don't like how she speaks when we're in groups. She is bringing her whole self here, and I'm totally happy with that. Let me show you how she delivers. So I want you to stop looking at the suit, the pink suit. The pink suit is okay. I want you to stop looking at how she has her hair done. I want you to stop thinking about the vernacular that she uses. I want you to look at the results. She is the highest performer in the unit, right? And those are the battles that we have to fight.
And I feel you on that. And one of the things that I always want to stress, like with our sisters in particular, I know as a man, I have a level of privilege as a man. So even though I'm a Black male, there's a level of privilege where I can do certain things, right? Or I can operate in a certain way because I have a level of male privilege in that regard, right?
Right.
So I always, but the thing is, when you're Black and you're a woman, right? I mean, it could be even more challenging, especially in a majority male, you know, dominant environment, et cetera, et cetera. And I appreciate and commend what you do, Dr. Morris, and I do the same for the sisters that I work with, either the ones that report to me or the ones that are my colleagues and things like that, because that does happen a whole lot. Like pretty much, but to see it, like, so whenever I see like a female colleague that, you know, sister crushing it in the workplace, I always give a maximum respect. My wife's Jamaican. I'm saying maximum respect. Like, I'm slowly becoming Jamaican. Like,
oh, she's Jamaican. Let me get some plantain real quick.
Oh, her plantain fire. Yeah, I'm slowly becoming Jamaican. Like I said, maximum respect. But I always get, what you're doing is commendable. I try to do the same thing because it's real.
So I think what we're talking about right now is really about justice in the workplace, right? And we see it in various forms, and all of us, and even when we talked about last week about being an activist and being a warrior in that space. So I'm wondering, as we talk more about celebrating hip hop culture and all the elements, and there are a lot of pieces in hip hop that are about social justice, and we see that reflected in multiple things. And I love this. This book came out earlier this year, Black Popular Culture and Social Justice Beyond the Culture. And so the two authors and editors are Lakita Bonnet Bailey and Jonathan Gales. And so if you know them, shout them out too. And there's a section in this book called Black Media and Social Justice. Now you'll love this. There are papers and essays in there on Wu-Tang Clan, on Cardi B, on The Breakfast Club, on the Watts Poets. And the essays collectively address how this innate, inherent, creative culture that we're describing about hip hop and all the elements, how it brings to life this future of unfiltered democratic thought, right? The connection between our lived experiences, you mentioned that, Jason, and broader political considerations about how people use Black cultural codes in political messaging to target audiences that look like us, advocacy for justice and expressions of pain and grief, and how this work, this creative work, these creative art forms help in restructuring our perceptions to educate, inform, and equip us to create our own democratic future. So my question to both of you, and Dr. Wendy, you can start on this one. How do we leverage these threads of social justice throughout this community to apply that to organizational justice?
That's a good one. That is a good one. So when I think about what you just said, I want to go back to an article that I read on currentaffairs.org and answering your question. It's a May, June 2021 article. And they're talking about how the deaths of George Floyd helped to spark the movement of social justice in a work that we do in institutions. So I just want to read you a quick clip from there. And it's given a description and background of George Floyd. For Floyd, the particulars of poverty were this: to be raised in the CUNY Homes Projects, to endure years of deprivation, and to die violently in a manner common to our caste. Were Floyd still alive or somehow reborn, he would not be hired to work within any of the institutions which now produce popular culture in his honor, because he never obtained a bachelor's degree. No matter how much Michael Brown or Breonna Taylor might have impacted a living Floyd, he would not be eligible to work at The Atlantic, at The New York Times, at HBO, or at Netflix.
Wow.
Whoa.
Whoa. That's real.
That was real. And that's the wake up call that we can use the hip hop culture to bring out the social justice and talk about organizational justice. But the very people that are being used to promote this sense of diversity in the organizations, if they were alive today, would not be able to work in the very organizations that say they are promoting such. For example, we know now that it seems to be cool, it seems to be okay for organizations to infuse diversity in content. But what does that look like in the organization? The website may hold the content, but do you see it enacted in policies? If we're going to talk about organizational justice, we're going to have to go beyond just the appearance, right? And so if we're going to be culturally sensitive, how about some empathy? The content doesn't do anything to deter the racial microaggressions, right, and other forms of race-based trauma that Black and brown people experience in the business. So if we are going to talk about social justice and what the pop culture is happening and helping or not as it relates to organizational justice, let's break it down and be real. It's not a one answer. These are all pieces that have to be put together.
Not we should be snapping on that.
I know, right?
That
felt like that was like a should have been spoken at the White House at one of those important.
Come on now.
Yeah.
And still I rise.
Right. Still I rise. Yeah, but no, I mean, everything you're saying, Dr. Wendy, is like facts. Like, I mean, when you said that, it kind of hit me in the chest really, really hard. Like, if they were still here, they wouldn't even be allowed to work in the organizations that's kind of, you know, evoking their names, et cetera, et cetera. Right. Or if they were, it would be kind of as the help or like as a janitor or something to that effect or things like that. Mm. And one of the things that I really look at when I look at organizations is like, okay, you're screaming diversity, equity, and inclusion. But like, what does your board makeup look like?
Come on now. I ask that question all
what
the
is your
time.
What does your executive team look like? Right? How are you developing opportunities for people of color in your organization to advance, grow, and thrive and feel psychologically safe in your organization? Right? Because I've had conversations with colleagues, you know, across, you know, who work at various organizations. You know, some of them in, you know, social justice that you know are founded by people who don't look like us, right? And they still have challenges. You know, they still get microaggressions. Deal with like tightrope syndrome, I mean, tightrope bias, all of those different things.
Yeah.
So I think what you said, Dr. Wendy, is like spot on. Like it's like, but like, how do we? I guess the question is like, how do we use hip hop to address that?
Is that the question? Maybe it's not. I think
maybe it's not.
Part of what we just addressed is saying when you are borrowing elements from hip hop culture and from hip hop community, and it comes across as slightly performative, right? That we can check you on that.
Not even
that's
slightly.
What I heard.
But it's not even slightly.
That's what
it's
I heard.
Like,
right?
Some of it's flagrant.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I agree.
Yeah. So let's try this. I saw this piece from, it was on governing.com, which is an interesting site. But this piece is written by the CEO of the Center for Music Ecosystems. So some really incredible work about using music, particularly with all the sustainable goals from the UN and how we do that across the board and incorporate, as you mentioned, we first started out this conversation, Jason, about how music is a universal language and how to help apply music in those situations. But there's this piece here, and it's called An Underutilized Economic Development Engine. Hip hop, right? And so it talks about particularly some of the, I think, high contact individuals and celebrities that we know and how they're using not only their celebrity and fame, but also their resources to build community. Talks about Killer Mike and some stuff with Rick Ross and his real estate in Tanzania and Killer Mike with venture capital firm and those. And we see that across the board. We see that with lots of artists who have a foundation in hip hop, even if they are hip hop adjacent, right? So if they're in pop music, R&B, all those things are connected. So my question to both of you is, when we think about work, how are the elements that we're talking about here that emanate from hip hop community, authenticity, creativity, how are those elements underutilized in the workplace?
I feel like they're critical, like organization building skills, you know, community, as far as being able to create a strong sense of organizational culture where there's psychological trust and sense of belonging, right? I mean, as far as the creativity, right? You know, pretty much coming up with novel ways to solve solutions and create new innovations and things like that. Because a lot of organizations have problems with creativity. Like they have situations where they need to think outside of the box, but they're unable to because their organizational culture isn't designed in a way where it allows people. It doesn't give people permission to fail or give people a sense that, okay, I can take risks without my job being on the line and things like that, right? But yeah. When you're freestyling, for example, I'm just going to use that. When you're freestyling, there's no like, oh, if you mess up a bar, it's over. You know what I mean?
They don't know. Like, they don't know.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I was like, in a cipher, there's like no, oh, if you mess up, you know, it's over. You know what I mean? Like, as long as you rocking with it and you keep on going, people going to rock with you. You say a cool little line, people going to laugh with you. Like, but if you're in an organization, you don't always feel that way, right? So the creativity and the sense of encouragement could be a powerful tool for organizations. Obviously, when we're talking about, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, the individual self-expression, creating a space where people feel comfortable expressing themselves and their unique culture, that's like a big part of hip hop, right? And then, you know, as far as like, if you're going to be an organization that's talking about like that kind of wants to position yourself to be, you know, a thought leader in social equity, or, you know, you want to have, maybe you have some CSR initiatives or things like that. The social commentary aspect of hip hop, where, you know, pretty much we're talking about what's going on, like not like, you know, like biting our tongue, but like in real terms and really thinking about solutions on how to address those things and really moving into solutions for those things. So there's a lot of elements of hip hop that could be that are essential and really are core aspects of organizational culture building that we just call them something different, you know, but they're really like the same thing.
I would also say too, and thank you for that, Jason, because I totally agree. I would say it can sometimes be used as an attention getter. And I say that because there are things that points we're trying to make that aren't always received. I remember I remember being in the space before I presented and wasn't sure if people were ready, if they were interested. They weren't acting like it. I was standing and waiting for everyone to be quiet so I can start. And that never took place. So I just began to do spoken word. And I did that using Rihanna's song, but when I used it as poetry, no one recognized it as such. And so my co-presenter, and shout out to Professor Davita Illy, who has a voice. I can only make a joyful noise. Okay. I need to just stick with poetry, but she can sing.
That's all you need in church.
Right. And she sang and she belted out the song, and then people were like, oh, and honestly, it captured the audience for the rest of the presentation. And so sometimes that's what we have to do at work. It is okay to be different. It is okay. And it doesn't take courage. This is who you are. And you have to make people respect the fact that you are not going to compromise your integrity because you're going to be like someone else or the way they want you to line up, right? That isn't the real you. So I like it when it's time to get that attention. It's a tool for that.
And here's why I love that, because I think about interviews that I've done in the past where the types of things we're talking about come up as part of my natural expression of how I think about work, right? I'm an activist and I see issues of justice in lots of places and lots of activities. And so I raise those issues when I talk to people about joining their organizations, because those are important to me. It's aligned with my values. So as I'm talking to you about joining your space, I'm trying to make sure it's the space that I want to be in. But what we notice, right, when you get to that spoken word version of it, Dr. Wendy, is that sometimes it's okay as a precursor to your experience. But on the other side, we don't want to hear that right now, right? We don't want to hear this constant cipher of issues that we're dealing with that we haven't addressed in the last 6 years, last 7 years, that we know are consistent, that we know are erroneous, that we know are impacting people badly, that we know are having a terrible effect on people's well-being in the space. We know that those are issues. We don't need a rap song about it, Lonnie, right?
So I'm about to say preach.
Right?
Switch up the modality.
Right. So that's significant.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Like, I think there is an attention getting aspect to hip hop, be it like with Dr. Wendy, like what you mentioned, as far as like, you know, like commanding the control of the audience. Because I mean, there's a whole aspect of master the audience and control the crowd. That's a huge element of hip hop. You know, I kick off business workshops, for example, with song and things like that. And then you have them the rest of the way. But like that master the audience element, because a great MC is going to figure out how to get the audience engaged, how to connect with the audience, how to approach things. And sometimes we got to do that in an organization, right? We start off with this song, metaphorically speaking. Audience ain't rocking with that's that right. one. They not in the mood for that. Let's switch right. it up to this one.
Yeah,
that's right.
We thought they wanted a party joint. They want a slow jam, right? So you switch yeah. up. You know, the communication with the slow jam, MCs gonna do what they have to do, and DJs do this too, because you know that's part of hip hop as well. They're gonna figure out what message resonates with the audience, what mood resonates with the audience, and they're gonna leverage that in accordance. And they don't go in there with a plan with that; like they iterate and they fill it out. And I find myself doing that in organizations that I've been a part of. You know, where I'm just trying to feel the pulse of like, okay, I know I have a message that I need to get across. I know I have something that's important for the organization to understand and to get across. And then I just start exploring on what's the best approach to addressing it until I figure it out. And then, go ahead and, definitely share it and whatnot in a way that makes impact and well is received. And that's a big part of hip hop as well, that just understanding the audience, figuring out how to control the crowd and things like that, which is a really, really powerful element for, change makers and the Chuck D's of organizations such as yourself.
I don't know if I qualify as Chuck D, but I appreciate that nod. But I do think what we're talking about here, what you're mentioning, Jason, is about understanding when to pivot, right? That sometimes the delivery isn't what the audience needs. You need to figure out what's that special mode of delivery
right.
that gets the message that you need. So sometimes it's not the barking that they want. Sometimes they want something that's a little more palatable, but you have to come to a point where you are well-developed enough and you understand how to navigate in the space. And so I think about it when artists shift, when you talked about it from a DJ perspective, from just a rapper, but I think when artists shift styles, I mean, we're thinking of somebody who is heavily influenced by hip hop, and we've just been reading all this stuff about the grossing of the Renaissance tour, right? But you look at Beyonce's Renaissance and that collection of music versus things in the past that were much more influenced by hip hop, that were much more pop, right? But so you got she ventured into a different genre. And we see other artists do that, saying people need something different from me at this time. And that's part of our role in organizations as well, to figure out how do we lead people when they want to hear something different.
And that's a big part. And then just playing off of that metaphor, even when you hear like certain artists, it's a combination of that and what's going on in my life right now.
Yeah.
So how are you pulling those unique experiences, especially if they're experiences that's affecting you and others in a negative way? How do you pull those into the album and share those in, also understanding in what modality that has to be delivered, So, yeah.
Yeah. Dr. Wendy, you have something?
I was also thinking about reading our audience, which is what you said, read the audience. So I was recently in a space where we talk about inclusivity. And even one of our logos expressed inclusivity. And because it's heritage, Hispanic Heritage Month, no one talked about it. No one mentioned it for the entire time. And I thought, there's a mistake here. There's something missing. But you can't go and tear people up and say, hey, this is a big mistake. Never ask permission. I wrote a welcome address, and when it was time for me to speak, I delivered it in Spanish, honoring our Hispanic Heritage Month.
Come right? on now.
And
you spoken word, and you sing, and you Spanish, and you a toxicologist. What is going on? Got a lot going on. What? What?
What can't you do? Yeah. Don't play. I need to get paid. So what was really interesting is I couldn't read the audience, right? Like, I thought this was really something that we had missed that needed to be addressed, and I couldn't. And so individually, when it was over, people came up and had made different comments about that. And so sometimes it's bringing in the way you deliver to address things that you know should not be missed. Mm. And that's how we have to use it as a tool. Just use it a little differently.
Mm. Mm. I love that. I love that. So let me ask you both this. And you might not, like, I follow the Hip Hop Caucus and do some really incredible work around social justice and racial justice. And they often publish statements about things that are happening in the broader community, whether it's political stuff, some economic stuff. But I saw maybe a couple of weeks ago that the Hip Hop Caucus posted a statement. They wrote a statement in response to President Biden creating this new American Climate Corps, right? And so part of their statement from the CEO says, through this program, the Biden administration has a critical opportunity to improve our lands and expand career possibilities for Black, Latinx, and Indigenous people, communities that are both disproportionately impacted by our climate crisis and disproportionately economically disenfranchised. So I love when we stand in those gaps. My question to both of you, Dr. Wendy and Jason, is what are the statements that the hip hop community needs to issue about work?
You be coming with these thought questions.
That's all I'm going to say.
Like, and I'm quick on the drive usually to everything, but you make me get quiet for like 20 seconds. Like,
that's all I'm going to say.
That's what we do at the Access Point.
So I'm going to say that one of the things that can be addressed is Black love.
Mm.
Towards each other. Towards one another, supporting. You touched on it earlier. I would love to see more of that. I think a divisive spirit that comes into the workspace is deliberate. It's no different than on the plantation.
Mm.
There's nothing different than the plantation. I'm going to give you this gun. If any of them try to escape, kill them.
Mm.
To make you think that you are different, that you are better, that you have this sense of authority when in fact everybody around you could kill you too.
Mm.
We really need to promote Black love.
I think man would be turned down for what? Elaborate in the sense that, there's this pervasive myth that like anything other than Eurocentric, you know, Western approach to work and in the workplace is like not professional, right?
Correct.
Whether it's certain hairstyles, whether it's certain vernacular, et cetera, et cetera. And I would dare say that we need to make a statement that challenges that myth because it's absolutely false, right? I mean, especially while these organizations crying diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, there should definitely be a space for, you know, people of color, you know, people from a hip hop background to really totally express themselves. I mean, and really, really be able to bring their full authentic self to work, share their experiences. And it actually benefits the organization. Like when you have individuals coming to work and really feeling like, oh, I feel safe here. I can be me. I can like take risks. I can like really bring my ideal self. Like you're going to get better outcomes. It's good for the bottom line as well. But I feel like that's a statement we need to make. Turn down for what?
It doesn't have to be anything small, right, Jason? I mean, it doesn't have to be anything large like hair or clothes or fashion or the way you are. It could be something as simple as the way you laugh. I remember being in a corporate space, and because my laugh was hearty, it was just totally inappropriate. Like it was complaints because I laughed. I actually laughed. They thought it should be more like, and I just noticed that nobody laughed out loud. I thought, wow. I mean, it felt like the Twilight Zone. But I was criticized. Honestly,
you're about to hear a hearty laugh from me.
You want to hear something funny?
I was like, criticized for that. Really?
Oh, man.
Oh, your laugh is too hard. Did you get an HR memo?
Oh, my gosh. And I remember people just, they showed their teeth and would shake, but they wouldn't laugh out loud. I thought, what is this? I am surely not a Stepford Wife. I couldn't do it.
So y'all want to hear something funny that's like totally indeed. Like,
yes, we
like
do.
Totally black and totally hip hop. Like, so when I interviewed for my current role at Dex Street, I interviewed with the co-CEO. And he hopped up on the Zoom. It was a Zoom interview, right? You know, people been dressing down on Zoom, so he had like a t-shirt on. I had like a buttoned up, a blazer, and a rose lapel. You know, I was my freshest. You know, Urban League make you dress.
I don't even own that stuff.
Urban League. I remember one time I was president of Urban League Young Professionals, and I came to one of the events without a jacket. And our VP, I
let you
I was
up.
The president of the Young Professionals. Our VP of External Affairs pulled me to the side. Don't you ever.
Yeah, stop. Buddy.
You are the president of the Metropolitan Board of the Chicago Urban League. Like, shout out Roderick. You know, that's
yeah.
True. But anyway, because of that, I came like suited and booted for the interview. And he was in a t-shirt. And I roasted him. Like, we cracked. Like, I literally. we still laugh about this to the day. It's the funniest interview ever. I was like, he was like, no, he's like, you're dressed nice. And I was like, you're in the V-neck. And then we both started laughing. And I literally was just like roasting his shirt. And then we both laughed about it. And then we went into the interview. And then he was like, I knew I was going to hire you right there. Like, whatever. But you know what? Like, but the interesting thing is I didn't think back about it. I didn't be like, oh, I might have went over the line, et cetera, et cetera. It was like, okay, I don't get it. Like, because like I would hate to be in an environment where I can't be my ideal self and my true self and everything and all of that. But like, yeah, it was funny. We still talk about every once in a while we bring it back up. Like, yeah. He was like, yeah, Jason, that was like, yeah, we still talk about that. But yeah, I roasted him. Like, I literally like was, I might as well have been doing like a smack mixtape or something on them, like
So our last question for this discussion, that's a great story. I think there's so many decorum issues around dress, but the laugh thing gets me, Dr. Wendy. My last question for this discussion, I found multiple, I was surprised at this, but multiple lists of songs that people have curated that deal with expressions of work, right? And so there's a piece from maybe, I think, 2021 on LinkedIn called How Hip Hop Helped Me Become a Better Professional. I think this is so connected to the work that you're doing, Jason. And they have some songs there like Can't Tell Me Nothing from Kanye West. So We're All in the Same Game from West Coast Rap All-Stars about the importance of community. And you know, in terms of the work that we do here, I love this next list that was out of the Music Industry How-To, which is a website for folks in the music industry. And it's 19 songs about hating work. And four of them were hip hop songs. And he started with a song by Cannabis and Bismarck from the movie Office Space called Shove This J-O-B. And it's about the exploitive nature of work and struggles of trying to find to maintain your creative vision, right? They talked about Spaceship from Kanye from, what's that, 04, I think.
I love that song.
Right, and You're Not Alone and Feeling Trapped by Your Job. And there were this album from an Australian rap group called Quit Your Job. The song is called Quit Your Job. It's by an Australian rap group called The Thunder Metals. And it's about avoiding conformity and pursuing your dreams. And there'll always be another job, right? No matter what happens. So when I think about these lists that I've been reading now, people thinking how people are incorporating their experiences of work or how they experience work into song, into creative space. My question for both of you is, what songs should we add, hip hop songs should we add to our playlist about work?
I wrote a song. It's on.
Well, I guess we got to add that one.
Put it out there.
It's called Gotta Get Away. It's literally breaking down. Like the first verse breaks it down, how I hate my job and how I need to launch my own business. And then the second verse, I literally give you a step by step path on how to leave your job.
I think we need to put that on right now. We're gonna play that.
So you could do that in lieu of me having a song.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wrote that song back in I think I recorded that in 2019, 2020. Yeah, but yeah, it's literally, yeah, because I was doing a program called Cubicle Escape Club back then where I was like working with a group of people to help them transition from their 9-to-5 to the full-time entrepreneurship. And I made the song inspired that song.
I love that. I love that. I do. So go ahead, Dr. Lee.
No, I don't have one, but if I had to make one up, it would be I'm not in the back in the corner in the dark. I'm coming out.
I like that. So I'm gonna go with a hybrid right now. So I'm big into R&B and soul music, and I love neo soul. And there's an artist who
I knew that about you without you even telling me that. From day one, I was Dr. Lonnie is a neo soul type of bro.
but there are so many elements of that, and so many ways that music is connected to hip hop. And we see sort of this. We see transition all the time. We see collaborations. And there's a song that was on my playlist for a very long time and won a Grammy. So I want to use that here because I think how I think about work deals with this. And it's part of being an activist and being a warrior for Just and Other Place. So if I put on, Pick Up Your Feelings. Because that song is about, I don't care what you're saying, right? That get out of your own head. That here's how we're moving forward. And I think about how I show up in the workplace all the time and how I try to confront the things that are bad and how I try to unpack all of the challenges and how I try to shepherd people into good spaces. And that sometimes that rubs people the wrong way, right? And people want to see you in a particular light, or they want you to act in a certain way. They want you to stay in this line or between these lines or in this box. And I have no qualms about how I show up, no qualms about the issues I raise, no issues around how I try to create spaces that are healthy for people, that promote well-being, and that promote justice in all spaces. And when you are outside of that thinking, pick up your feelings. Got it.
You change agent, you.
I actually got two songs. Kanye, there's amazing. More. Kanye amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It just really makes you feel invincible. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's a really powerful song. And then R&B song by a hip hop artist. So Lauryn Hill's title song from The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill.
Yeah. Woo!
Been my heart.
And you sing.
Oh, yes.
And I made up my mind. You know what I'm saying? That song.
Don't know that song at all. Not that version.
Yeah. I think it's track 14 on the album. But it's the title.
He's teasing you. He's teasing you.
I appreciate that. So I'm glad we're able to wrap up the conversation with song. So when I think back on all the things we discussed today, and this has been a healthy conversation and a hearty conversation, and that's an ode to your laugh, Dr. Wendy. There are a few things that stand out, right?
Hearty, hard.
So from an employee perspective, when we're talking about this juxtaposition of hip hop and culture and expression of authenticity in the workplace, I think we've identified several things. One, consider how you are integrating your creative talents and hobbies into your purpose and into your career. And that's what you started out by telling us the story of how you got to the discussion you had with the TEDx talk, Jason. Think, how are you leveraging those innate talents and your whole self to expand your professional impact. That's important. How are you sharing your story at work? And how does that translate the things you want people to understand about your authentic self? We talked about yourself being your capital, right? That all those things you bring, all that stuff that we learned, we talked about, is that's your capital and that's your wealth. And that means you bring value into spaces when you get there. This is one we got from you, Jason, right? My intelligence plus my swag means I win. So all those things that are you make you a winner. You are a champion in this space. Dr. Wendy talked to us about the spoken word activity, right? So what is your spoken word? How do you capture the audience? How do you command their attention? There are some elements of your culture, our culture, in Jason's example about reading the guy who is the interviewer about his V-neck shirt. There's some elements of you that show up that will be a hole in one every time. That authentic self that you wear when you do not have the mask, when you are showing up and just presenting, as Dr. Wendy said, when I'm on the beach, I'm in the office, I'm behind a podium, it's all the same. For some people, that's going to crack it wide open. For leaders and supervisors, we want you to think about, what are the universal languages that get your people going? We talked about this from a perspective of hip hop community, but also that music, particularly hip hop music and all music, right, is a universal language that gets people going. It's about healing. How do you support people's healing through universal languages? I want managers and supervisors and leaders to think about, whose authenticity are you boxing up? So when you are pushing back on how people show up as themselves and all this creativity and all this authenticity, whatever that means, if they are rapping in the space to create presentations, or if they're at, or they're dancing, or they're doing spoken word, how are you blocking people from being themselves? This is one that's really important because I've experienced this and I've worked with multiple executives who've experienced this. Are you weaponizing someone's culture to cause harm? Are you taking what people bring to work and making that an issue, making the who I am as me? Are you making that an issue and causing harm rather than celebrating individuality? I wonder, for leaders and supervisors and managers, how are you developing people to do what Jason reminded us is about the hip hop community, to master the audience and control the crowd? That is a skill that must be developed. That requires that you pour into people so they understand the nuances between those spaces. How are you developing people to be able to do that? From a group and teams perspective, we want you to think about, what is the wealth that you are accumulating in your own practices and behaviors, right? We talked about that, the community health. What is the wealth that you're accumulating? All the things that you're doing, all of the differences that you bring, that you were taught, the things you were taught by your aunts and your uncles and your grandmother and the people that supervised you when you were just working at the corner store. What are those things that you're bringing that help you fight oppression and injustice? What's the wealth you're accumulating there? How are you showcasing your community capital wealth? And we went through the six areas that covers, and developing strategies to fight oppression and justice in your space. How are you showcasing that rather than hiding those things? How do you accommodate creativity and divergent thinking in your work cipher, right? Because Jason told us, in a cipher, you just keep going. Sometimes people mess up, but you don't shun them for that. You don't ostracize them for that. You keep going. You continue to make this great thing that is the combination of all your efforts and not just the one or two mistakes. How are you supporting a culture of belongingness and love? And Dr. Wendy said, if we had to make a statement about it, love is what we need to address. Black love in the workplace. How are you dismantling all the structures that are created or that have been created to keep us separate and fighting against each other to create something different? From an organizational perspective, I wonder, are you ostracizing authentic expression with rules and regulations? We've talked about that before on the access point. What inherent tools are you allowing people to access to ascend throughout the organization? Are you allowing people to tap into those things that are natural to them, that come natural to them, that are their expressions of creativity and love and vibrancy? And are you taking that away? What is the cultural wake-up call that you need? Can you provide justice for the people that are impacted by your performative causes that your organization supports, right? Could you hire any one of those names that we listed? Could you hire George Floyd in your organization? How does your organization operationalize empathy? Because part of the culture that we're talking about, the hip hop culture, is about empathy and how it permeates throughout the community, because we see each other's struggles, because we identify with each other's issues and the injustice that we all experience, and we galvanize our energy in that way. Cultural wealth capital is a source of critical organization building skills. We talked about that, right? So how people learn to navigate, how people learn to socialize. How are you harvesting those to create organizational value? And this was the last one for me. And Jason gave us this, right? If we had to address this on a larger scale, turn down for what? How are you harming people through your organizational practices, customs, policies, and rules? You are asking them to not be themselves, but to be more like you, or at least what your organization pretends to be. As we close out today's conversation, thank you so much, Dr. Wendy and Jason. And I ask this of everyone who comes to this show. If anyone who's listening right now to the Access Point and decides not to heed any of the things that we've brought up, what is the cost to them? What is the black and brown tax that they pay if they don't understand how all the elements of hip hop culture translate into a great work experience? Jason.
Wow, we said all of that.
He does that thing.
Mercy, I was just enjoying it. I was just enjoying all of that. We smart. I would say the black tax on that would be, you know, and I'll start with individuals, and then I'll start with leaders. You know, from the individual perspective. A really crappy work experience, ultimately. An environment where you're not able to thrive, an environment where you're not able to grow and prosper, an environment where you're afraid to be yourself. And limiting your horizons and your growth because you feel like who you really are and what you really bring to the table may not be fully valued, as opposed to finding the place where you are. It's almost like that story of the kid who had the used car. They took it to, you know, a dealer. They only wanted to give him $500. They took it to collectors. The collectors wanted to give him $100,000. You know, so where are you worth $100,000 at, right? And having the courage and the confidence to recognize who you are and finding the place where you're valued. For leaders, I would say the tax would be, you know, a crappy organizational culture, challenges retaining top talent, because people who are super confident and super talented, you know their value, know their worth, and they're not going to be restrained or restricted by limitations or like toxic behavior and things like that, right? So you're losing high performing people. You know, you're going to have a difficult organizational culture, toxic team dynamics. And the list goes on and on as far as some of the things, if you're a leader listening to this, who fails to heed to some of these dynamics.
Thank you so much, Dr. Wendy.
So if you fail to heed to the messages, the many messages that were given tonight, I would say that you will continue to operate in fear. Fear is bondage. Fear is a poison. Fear causes paralyzation, right? Of all of the real you that you can bring. And so as we look at how the influence of from pop culture into everything that you want to bring to work, that's part of the landscape that you want to operate in. If you are not comfortable in doing that and you never bring the real you to work, you will maintain that state of being in fear and bondage.
I love that. And for me, I think recession, right? And I think of recession because it's the opposite of what we talked about with community cultural wealth. So all those skills that we learned in growing up, all those things, how to navigate these bad situations. And if we don't take this stuff and put it into action and operationalize those things that we understand conceptually, that we have adopted as part of our values and practice, that we lose the wealth that we accumulated. And we know what that looks like, right? Because we see that over years with colonization, which is part of how we frame the work experience, right? So people have taken us out of our natural communities and put us in another space and said, I want you to work like this. I want you to behave like this. And so if you cannot preserve your wealth, then you are at a recession. It is always a joy to be here with a talented guest. And thank you so very much, Jason, for joining us and giving us your expertise and your expert opinion. And the work that you're doing is incredible. And I'm so glad we had a chance to talk to you. We'll make sure people get out and watch the TEDx talk that you have. Dr. Wendy, you are a wonderful co-host and you hold me up all the time. I appreciate you for all the things that you do and all the value that you bring to these conversations. For those of you who are listening right now, thank you for joining us for this episode of The Access Point. We discussed a lot. Let's keep this conversation going. You can find us anywhere where you can get your podcasts. Like, share, comment, subscribe. If there's something that we share that resonates with you, if you've got a lingering question or there's an aha moment, thoughts for a future discussion, use the hashtag TAP Reflections. That is TAP for The Access Point Reflections across all the social media to let us know. Have a good night, everybody.
Good night. And thank you. Thank you, Jason. Dr. Lonnie.
Thank you, everybody.
Living Corporate is a podcast by Living Corporate LLC. Our logo was designed by David Dawkins. Our theme music was produced by Ken Brown. Additional music production by Antoine Franklin for Musical Elevation. Post-production is handled by Jeremy Jackson. Got a topic suggestion? Email us at livingcorporatepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us online on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and living-corporate.com. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned.